Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the doctrine of parens patrae, the parent-child relationship, when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said to you, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's the professor, or a professor, at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about these budding young lawyers. He said, it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said, it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School, the fourth largest law school in the United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, the doctrine of parens patrae. That's spelled P-A-R-E-N-S-P-A-T-R-I-A-E. Latin for the parent-child relationship. I received a letter here not too long ago. Well, I guess it was quite a while now. And a fellow wrote me a letter, and he said he wanted me to talk about this thing of the fifth commandment and honor your father and mother and the parent-child relationship. Evidently, he felt that he had been put upon by his parents, and that happens. And then it works the other way around. Children will oppress their parents. That is, there's the parent-child relationship, and in that relationship is abuse of children. And then you have, after emancipation, the abuse of parents by children, and sometimes even before emancipation, not often, but occasionally, you get some big strapping teenage kid over there slapping his mother up alongside the head, and or maybe taking advantage of or beating up on his daddy. And there's a tremendous amount of of legislation that has been enacted over the past 100 or 150 years concerning this parent-child relationship. And most often, we get calls from people and they want to know, what can I do about social lady who just came in and took my children? I saw a piece on the news last night that out in Oregon, they have a tremendous problem with methamphetamines. And they have a lot of people out there that are trying to manufacture this illegal drug. And so you got parents that have little children and they're making this meth in their bathtubs or in their kitchens or wherever they're making it or however you make it. And they get busted and thrown in jail, and then they've got little children. And so the state comes in, takes their children and puts them in foster care. In many cases, the parental rights are terminated by the state and those children are taken from their parents forever and put into some foster home. And maybe they never see or hear of their natural parents again. Now, a lot of times people say, well, good riddance, you know, to bad trash. Poor white trash deserve to have their children taken away from them. And then there's another school of thought that says, well, why should the state come in here and interrupt or break up families? I mean, sure, you know, the parents are guilty. You might not do this. The parent might go out here and murder somebody. You wouldn't necessarily terminate his parental rights. He goes to prison, comes back out, and takes up life again. But in drug cases, almost invariably, the state will come in there and take parental control of the children, terminate parental rights, and then take those children away. And there's a big business along that line. You know, a white, blonde, blue-eyed baby is worth $80,000. And I know there's people out there, oh no, that can't happen in America. That's called white slavery. Well, yeah, it happens here in America. I was personally involved in just such a case. And when social lady can come into a family, especially if it's a young, unmarried female who has a child, they like to take those children and give it to married people who can't have children. You know, you take a married couple, and maybe this woman is 40 years old, and life's passed her by. She's had a career, and she's now beyond childbearing age, and she wants a baby. It's so bad that now Americans are going to China, bringing Chinese babies in, and they're going to Russia and Eastern Europe and adopting babies from around the world to bring them to the United States because American women are infertile, can't have babies. And so, of course, if you can get one here in the United States, you can get one from Russia a lot cheaper, but if you can get one here in the United States, it's worth about $80,000. And there's a lot of people involved. There's social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists and caseworkers, social lady gets involved, lawyers and legal fees come in here, judges take payoffs and take these babies away from, and then there's a legal methodology for doing this, taking babies away from their parents and then putting them in foster care and taking them out of foster care and putting them into homes where people want to adopt them. Now, I'm not suggesting that the judge says, well, write me a check for $80,000 or put this on your MasterCard, you know, pay me the bribe and you can have this kid. I'll cover that a little bit later. You know, judges and lawyers, you know, aren't dumb people, you know. They didn't get through law school and go through the legal process, you know, because they're dumb. You know, judges can take kickbacks and payoffs, you know, without ever getting caught, and so can lawyers and prosecutors and policemen and police chiefs, and goes on all the time. It ought not to. God prohibited that, you know. It's against the law to take gifts and bribes and be corrupted, and politics gets involved, and that's against the law, too. But, you know, people do things that are illegal. People go to whorehouses, you know. Just because it's illegal doesn't mean that people aren't going to do it. Every once in a while, the FBI comes in, you know, and catches a corrupt judge or a corrupt prosecutor or a corrupt policeman or something like that. Happens once in a while, but it's pretty rare. And it goes on, and it's a whole lot more widespread than we'd like to think. But generally speaking, people that listen to this program are not prosecutors and judges and policemen per se, but rather just ordinary Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, who have legal questions about children or how do I keep my child out of the public school. I just picked up a call here a minute ago, and a little lady down in Texas said that she wanted to know more about homeschooling. And, you know, if you homeschooled your child, you may have social lady coming out there knocking on your door, or somebody from the welfare department, the local police department, and threatening you and saying, well, we're going to take your child away from you and put them in foster care, and you'll never see your kid again if you take your child out of public school. What does the law say about you educating your child at home? What does the law say about you educating your child, period? Does the state have a right to dictate to you? You know, if you listen to social lady, she'll come out and tell you yes. And if you listen to the judges in the courts, it's unconstitutional. And people get caught in the middle. They don't know who to believe. People in this country, at least here in the United States, are virtually legal incompetents. I mean, if you start talking to people about their knowledge of law, I mean, it is down where it's near zero. They know more about movie stars and movies and sports and sports stars and sports heroes. I mean, you could sit there and talk to anybody. He'll tell you how much this baseball player gets paid. They can tell you about his home runs for the last 5 years. They can tell you about his contract and how long it's running and when was the last time he was traded. I can tell you all about that. You ask this guy, well, what about corporal punishment and where does corporal punishment and child abuse begin? And then he hadn't got a clue. He hasn't got a clue. You ask him, well, where does social lady come into the picture over here and where does her powers begin? And then he hasn't got a clue. He wouldn't know. And so because of this ignorance on the part of lay people across America, you know, we get a lot of calls in here. And so in the public interest, let's start taking a look at some of these questions that people have concerning the parent-child relationship. And how far does social lady's power extend? And what do you do to prevent the state from taking your child? And if this comes up, how do you get your child back? And what are the standards that the courts look at? And where did Moses and parental rights begin and end? And what about the common law and the civil law and the statutes? And, you know, on and on these questions go. So if we take a look here at the doctrine of parens patriae, or the parent-child relationship over here, let's just take a look at American jurisprudence. Now, American jurisprudence is called AMJUR. It's a legal encyclopedia. It works just like the Encyclopedia Britannica or Collier's Encyclopedia and so on, except that it won't have things in there, you know, about people's births and deaths. You know, you look up in the encyclopedia, you want to find out when Bob Hope was born and when he died, they'll have a little biographical sketch about Bob Hope or about President Grover Cleveland or Abraham Lincoln, but you won't find that in the legal encyclopedia. But you will find the parent-child relationship in volume 59, and there are 164 sections on this parent-child relationship. And you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar now. You don't have to have a PhD. I mean, if you can read and write at any level. I mean, hell, if you can just read and write at the third grade level, you know, just pick up a newspaper and read it and get a little comprehension, you could read American jurisprudence. Oftentimes, lay people are absolutely amazed, you know, when for the first time they come to law school, and I pick up American jurisprudence or CJS or some other legal writing, and I say, here, read this paragraph right here and see what that tells you. And they'll read that paragraph and say, my God, I didn't know that. I say, well, could you understand that? Yeah, I think I can understand it. It's written in English, and you could understand it, too. So when we look at the introduction, the law of the parent and child defines the legal rights and duties which spring from the mutual relationship of the father or mother and their child. And like the law of any other domestic relations, it is governed by the law of the states rather than that of the United States. So it's a state's issue, not a federal issue. So anytime we're talking about parent and child relationships, you know, you can forget about federal law and just concentrate on the law of your state, which means that we're going to look at the statutes of your state. So if you're in, you know, say a state like Alaska, and we're talking about homeschooling, boy, that's really a liberal state on homeschooling. And you take a look at another state like Michigan, oh, God, they're really down here. Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, that's another tough one. So we're looking at the law of your state. Now, the relationship of a parent and child is a status, not a property right. Now, that's an exact renvoi on the common law, because under the common law, when Moses came down off the mountain, you owned your child, boys and girls. When you had a baby, that baby was yours, to the exclusion of God himself. I know it sounds kind of wild, you know, but I'm just telling you that when God gives you something, he divorces himself from the property right. Now, property has a distinct meaning. Here's what it is. When you look at property, whatever this thing of property is, it's an absolute right to the physical possession and use of the thing or the right attached to it. So property is more than just the thing itself. It is the right and the use and control of the thing. So if I said, well, whose car is that? And you'd say, well, that's my car. I'd say, is that car your property? And you might say, well, yeah, that's my property. I have a property right in that car. Okay? And can you operate that car anywhere you want to? Well, no, you can't. Can you operate that car in any way that you so desire? And the answer is no, you can't. And that's because the state has a proprietary interest in the automobile, as evidenced by the license plate on the front of it, or the back of it. So the state has an interest in this automobile. You have an equitable interest in the state's car, is what it boils down to. It's like renting a car from Hertz. And you have a property right in that Hertz car. You have a right to use it, as long as you pay the fees and do all the things that Hertz told you to do in the contract that you signed. So you have a limited property right in the car. You don't own the car, but you have a property right in the use of the car. Children are the same way. Under the common law, you have an unlimited right to the child. Under the common law, you have a right to kill the child. You can take the child out and stone him to death. Now, that's about as absolute property right as you can get. See, I own some cattle down here, and those cattle, I have an absolute property right. I can kill those cattle. I can take that cow out and kill her and eat her. Now, that's about as absolute as you can get. Now, we used to have that right in our children, but we don't any longer. The state has come in, and now we have a different relationship with our children. And so this is what introduces social lady and the police and the state and judges and termination of parental rights and things like that into the equation. And so I don't make these rules and regulations and laws. I'm just a reporter, and I'm just here to tell you this. Here's the way this game is played. Here's the way it works. Now, I get engaged every once in a while in a student's legal case or his actions. I can't represent the student, but I can educate him. I can tell the student, well, here's the way the game is played, and he can go out and play the game. And it doesn't make any difference in the game of parental custody and control. I don't care, as a matter of law, who has possession of the child. There are 12 rules that we have to go by. Now, you can have a model parent. I mean, you could have this lady, and she's really a nice lady. But there are 12 rules that govern her relationship with the child. And if I can catch that lady violating one or two of those rules, I can terminate her parental rights or show the father. I can't personally do it, but I could show the father how to go into court and terminate that nice lady's parental rights over that child and change custody, or vice versa. Isn't that just special? And oftentimes people will say, well, my wife is a whore, and she's a drug addict, and she's got custody of my little girl, and I think it's really terrible and awful, and she shouldn't have custody of that child, and blah, 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 blah. And we've been trying to get custody of that child away from her and trying to show the judge this, that, and another thing, and we haven't gotten anywhere. And that's because you don't know how to do it. I mean, if you knew how to do it and you knew how to bring the issues of law before the court, you could terminate that woman's parental rights in a heartbeat. I mean, you can change custody, you know, fairly easily. It comes up as a matter of statute in this state every year. Custody of a child comes up for review every year. Did you know that? And you can bring up custody of a child in extraordinary circumstances at any time. More often than once a year. So those are just a couple little facts and figures that you need to be aware of. So unlike the common law relationship of husband and wife, there is no conception of unity of legal identity of a parent and a minor child. So, you know, you got a parent here, mom and dad, and you got this minor child, and because of the doctrine of parens patriae, which has come into play to supplant the common law, you no longer have an absolute right to your child. It's a conditional privilege granted by the state, and the state owns the child. Just like the state owns your automobile, the state owns the child. Now, you've got a right to use the automobile. I mean, you can drive it up and down the road, you know, as long as you pay your fees. And as long as you do what the highway patrolman tells you to do and what the legislators mandate, you know, you can use the automobile. But you don't have an absolute property right in it like you did under the common law. See, when we were dealing with God and Moses, and you had an automobile, you had a horse and buggy, you had a horse or something, you had an absolute right to travel, you had an absolute property right in the horse, the carriage, the wagon, etc. You had an absolute right to property in your child. It's no longer true. And people say to me, well, how did that change? Well, it changed when you changed your law. When you changed your God, you changed your law. So when you moved from the Ten Commandments to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, you changed your law. When you did that, you changed your God. The law is different today than it used to be. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm not here to moralize. I'm not here to tell you you made a mistake. I'm just here to tell you that that's what you did, and those are the consequences that flow from it. I don't like it or lump it. Now, I personally have my personal views, you know, like this new judge appointed. You know, his name is Judge Roberts. He's being appointed or nominated for appointment to the Supreme Court, and people are all sitting out there, well, gee, I wonder what his beliefs are. Well, you know, he probably has his own personal beliefs, but his personal beliefs, when it comes to the law, come into second place, just like mine do. You know, I've got my personal beliefs as to driver's licenses and certificates of competence and parens patriae and property rights. And then there's the law. And then I'm just here to report to you that that's the way that works, and here's what the law is, and if you want to achieve that goal or that end, then here's what you have to do, A, B, C, in order to achieve that desired result. So you no longer have a property right in your child. You used to. There was a time in America as recently as, oh, say, the 1860s and 70s. Before the 14th Amendment came into play, when you had an absolute property right in your child. That now has changed. Let me flip over here a couple of pages and let's take a look at, however, parents have no property interest in their children and should not be permitted to deal with them as property. How do you like that? So the time was, when we look at parental rights, duties, and authority, generally, except as modified by legislation relating to domestic affairs and the family has remained in law a self-governing entity under the discipline of the parents. The supremacy of the mother and father in their own home as regards the control of their children is generally recognized. And it's said that the parental authority should be so far supreme that whatever would unduly impair it should be foregone by the child for his ultimate good. And anything which brings the child into conflict with the parent diminishes parental authority or hampers its exercise and will not be countenanced save upon positive provision of the statute law. Let me ask you this. What business does the state coming into your family? Where does that come in? Did we get that from God at the Garden of Eden? Did God say, hey, listen, you know, what we need here is a state and federal government, and we got to have a president and a Congress, and these people are going to pass laws, and we got to have these judges out here to enforce these laws? No, sir. In fact, God specifically instructed you, boys and girls. He said to you, do not change this law. And he told you that in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. He says, no, I've given you the law. There are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. I give the law. I'm the lawmaker. You sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what I tell you. And he said, don't you add to this law, and don't you diminish anything from this law. In fact, Jesus went a little bit further than that. He said, man does not live by bread alone. He says he lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, of course, we don't do that today, not in modern America. We can't speak for all of you. There might be a few thousand that haven't bowed their knee to Baal yet that still follow that principle of law, but the average Joe Sixpack American doesn't do that. Now, as a result of that, Mr. Joe Sixpack American, because you don't follow the law of God and you don't practice the Mosaic Code, then you practice the law of your state, or you practice the law of your nation, or you've made a contract with Baal in which you have agreed to do that. We call that the Roman civil law. And as a result of that, you're bound to it. And as a result of that, you do not have a property right in your child. Right now, once that's understood, we have a child here, and I understand fully that that child belongs to and is the chattel property of the state of Oklahoma. She's 17 years old. And I don't have any illusions at all. I understand perfectly who owns that girl. Boy, sure makes life simple. Once I understand who mommy and daddy are, it's the state of Oklahoma and the House and the Senate of the legislature of Oklahoma. Well, now I know that I have to follow the instructions that I get from Oklahoma. See how simple that is? I don't think that's good. I've got my own personal opinions, and I think it would be better if we had the old common law rule, but, you know, here again, I didn't change it, and I didn't make it. I'm just here to report to you that that's the way that game is played. Let me flip over here a couple pages. What are the rights of the respective parents? By the common law, parental rights, like most rights pertaining to the family, were vested in the father alone. Well, that didn't make ladies or the women out there feel very good. See, God, you know, the Creator, He doesn't know anything about families and family relations and parent and child relationships. And He screwed up. He made a terrible, awful mistake. And so we are in the process of fixing God's mistakes to this day. And that's why we have made these laws and rules and regulations regulating this parent-child relationship. Recognizing that God vested the family power in the father alone. We are now in the process of converting from patriarchal family to matriarchal family. Now, during his life, the mother, or during his life, the mother, at least under ordinary circumstances, had no parental rights recognized by law. All right, ladies, you would get married, and your husband would be the absolute head of the family, and you had absolutely no parental rights recognized by law, and that came from God Almighty through Moses to us under the Ten Commandments, pursuant to the statutes, judgments, and commandments that Moses gave to all of us, and then told us, don't you change one jot or tittle of that either. And that didn't make you ladies feel very good, and so you decided that you wanted to change that. And so you did. You did. And now because you changed that law, you now have social lady who comes in and takes 2.5 million children out of their homes and places them into foster homes. This in turn has engendered a business that makes your blonde, blue-eyed daughter worth $80,000 in the black market trade for babies. And believe you me, the state has the power, along with social lady and psychocentric lady and the lawyers and the judges and et cetera, and they can take your child away from you and make some money in the process. especially if they can catch you dealing in drugs or something like that. Now she, that is the mother, was entitled, it was said, only to reverence and respect. Now the modern tendency, here we go. Here's the modern tendency, however, is toward the equalization of the rights of the father and mother. By God, that's what we want, ladies. We want equalization, don't we? And this is evidenced by the adoption of statutes in many jurisdictions making the father and mother joint guardians, notice, guardians, over their children, or expressly providing that the father and mother shall have the joint and equal right to the custody, control, and services of the child. Boy, we're going to be fair. But I want you to notice, ladies, that you don't have a property right in the child. What you have is a guardianship of the child. Now, when we take a look at the guardian-ward relationship, guardian and ward, we find that the state is the superior guardian, and you don't have a property right in the child, ladies. What you have is a guardianship. That is an equitable interest with your husband in the state's child. In other words, as a matter of law, you and your husband have been reduced to the status of babysitters over the state's children. I'm just reading this to you right out of Rights of Respective Parents from Parent and Child Under the Doctrine of Parens Patriae. I'm on page 94, section 11, Rights of Respective Parents. As they say at the Blue Room, read 'em and weep as the dealer deals out the cards. Read 'em and weep. Well, hang on, boys and girls, there's more to come. But let me give you this reminder, and that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet as well. And for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, that's what we're talking about right now, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law, from the scriptural perspective, no less. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archive. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That means that they're recorded, and they're on the Internet on our website, and that you can access those programs and download them onto your own compact disc or listen to the program at 16 or 32-bit, or you can download it and replay it on the radio or whatever you want, and that's all free. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Alright, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or staff of this local radio station or this network. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, just go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Tonight's program, Parens Patres, spelled P-A-R-E-N-S, P-A-T-R-I-A-E. Kind of a funny spelling, isn't it? What that means is the parent-child relationship. Parent-child relationship. Sometimes people want to get their children back from the state. Sometimes they want to get their children away from their wives. And sometimes the wife wants to get the children away from the husband. And, you know, there's all these custody battles that go on constantly. And sometimes people want to send their children to a private school or a home school, and they're timid and fearful because they don't know where the law is. They don't know where the line is drawn in the sand, or they want to beat their kid. You know, they want to take a belt and whip the living daylights out of that little sucker. But they're timid and they're fearful because they don't know where the lines are drawn in the sand on corporal punishment. Corporal punishment. Yeah, you can whip your kid for corrective purposes, and I'll show you how to do that. You can tell a child who has been disciplined by corporal punishment and those that haven't. You can go into a restaurant and you listen to this little kid yelling and screaming and kicking and throwing himself on the floor. There's a child that has never had corporal punishment, doesn't know what a spanking is. And then you see another child over here, and the little kid, I got the boy that works every once in a while, and he's 15, 16 years old, very respectful young fellow. Says yes, sir, and no, sir, and one thing and another. I told his daddy, I said, well, I can tell that you whipped this kid. And he said, hey, yes, sir, I do. Not so much anymore. I said, but yeah, I've spanked him a time or two and whipped him. Yeah, you can tell the difference between children that are raised with corporal punishment and those that aren't. And there's a law, and the law of your state provides for corporal punishment, whipping your kid for corrective purposes. I'll show you how that works a little later on. But right now we're talking about the rights of the respective parents, which is exactly the opposite to what it used to be back in, say, the 1850s. Now, a transfer of the parental status and rights from the father to the mother may be made by agreement, tacit or express, between them. You can do that. But the general rule under the common law was that the father had parental control over the child and had the ownership of the child. So let me make an observation here. Ladies, now listen up. No woman on this planet Earth has ever owned a child. From the day that God made Eve to today, nor will any woman that has ever drawn breath, past, present, or future, ever own a child on this planet. Now, that's a pretty all-encompassing statement. And that just infuriates women when I tell them that in class. You know, they come here to school. Or they look at me like, you got to be out of your cotton-picking mind. I'm going to repeat that, so that every woman listening to me right now can get so mad, so enraged, that they'll hate me forever. But remember, ladies, I didn't make it this way. I'm just the reporter. So if you want to whip me, it's okay, but you need to blame God. I mean, you need to get real mad at the creator of the universe, because he's the one that set this program into motion. No woman on this planet, today, yesterday, or tomorrow, has ever, does now, or ever will in the future, own a child. It's never happened in the past, it isn't happening now, and it's never going to happen in the future. And that's because it was ordained that way by God Almighty Himself. And, of course, it's naturally followed by the civil law, which simply took that property right and appropriated it to himself, or to itself. It's not a him, it's an it. Now, there was a time on planet Earth, under the laws of God, the creator of the universe, when men, fathers, owned their children. There was a time. And that comes under the fifth commandment, by the way. I mean, it was ordered by God himself. It was specifically made that way. And there's a law that creates it. It's called the fifth commandment. It says, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God gives you. And he that smiteth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Whoo! Can you believe that? I mean, if you got a punk-ass kid, some pimply-faced punk kid who slaps his mother, that child shall surely be put to death. That's D-E-D, dead on arrival. Now, of course, we can't do that today, and of course, no state will allow you to do that, boys and girls, and that's because that child isn't yours. Belongs to the state. And the state does not allow you babysitters to run around killing the state's children. In fact, the state, just the other day, it was in this last term, the Supreme Court ruled that children under the age of 18 cannot be put to death. They cannot suffer capital punishment. I mean, let me repeat this. In Exodus 21, verse 15, God Almighty said, he that smites his father or mother shall surely be put to death. The Supreme Court of the United States says, if you've got somebody under the age of 18 and he goes out here and kills somebody, I mean he murders somebody under the age of 18, you cannot give him the death penalty. Under the law of God, you could give a kid the death penalty for slapping his mother. Smiteth. Exodus 21:17. He that curseth his father or mother shall surely be put to death. Hell, if you had a kid under the law of God, under the law of Moses, that just walked in and said, mother, mother, here's the flag, I'm putting the branch under your nose, kiss my ass. That kid would be put to death for doing that to his mama. Or his daddy, either one. And the person who had the power to do that, of course, was the father. Not the mother, the father. Because the father owned the child and had absolute property right in the child, which, of course, I just showed you a little while ago, isn't the case today under modern rules. And we want to be modern, don't we? I mean, we don't want to be old-fashioned and practice this fifth commandment. Because that's not gentle. That's not kind. That's not gentle. But then, of course, you got all of these juvenile delinquents running around on the streets, you know, in street gangs. And then you've got all these punks running around in your public schools assaulting and raping girls in school and assaulting teachers and shooting people off of street corners. I mean, you got a juvenile crime problem here in the United States that just defies description. And I haven't talked to anybody or heard anybody ever come up with a solution to the problem. Nobody knows what the hell to do about juvenile crime here in the United States of America. We didn't have juvenile crime in this country before we abolished parental ownership of children. I mean, you know, you did have some juvenile crime, but you didn't have anything like you got today. I mean, it's an epidemic here today. Now, I'm just pointing out to you that there is a solution to juvenile crime. You take the little sucker out and you kill him. And that solves the problem. Somebody says to me, well, we can't do that. Well, okay, well, then you can't solve juvenile crime. But I'm going to assure you this. There is coming a day when the second coming is over and done with and past tense, and the Messiah takes control of the world's government and throws George W. Bush and Putin and Fidel Castro and every other would-be despot out of office and replaces them with such people as King David and the 12 apostles and Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Daniel, and so on, and replaces those ineffective, wimpy, do-nothing politicians, and we replace the law of God, we're going to put the law of God back. We're going to replace the Roman civil law with the law of God. We're going to change it back. We will do away with juvenile crime. It will be bloody. It will be heart-rending. It will just tear you up in the opening phases. But once the program gets underway, and it's a very simple process, what you do is you take this juvenile, this thug, you know, you take this pimply-faced punk off the streets of New York who has just shot and killed somebody on a street corner over a bad drug deal, and you take him down to Broadway, into Times Square, and you bring in a dump truck, and you dump a load of rocks in the street, and you tie this little punk up to a stake, maybe a street post or a light post, and then you line up all the people around him, and you stone this kid to death in full view of every other kid. They will broadcast it on television. That's one. This is what we do to punk kids on bad drug deals. And the question arises, well, how many of those stonings will have to take place? I don't know. In ancient times, it didn't take very many. When I went to school, it wouldn't take any stonings at all. When I went to school, the teacher would just grab you and whop you. Spank you right in front of everybody. And the worst thing could happen is you get sent down to the principal. You know, we used to have discipline. We had corporal punishment. I just slapped the hell out of you. I guess in Catholic school they still do that. We didn't have juvenile delinquency. You don't have school shootings in Catholic schools. They don't allow it. They'll just take one of those nuns. You know, you get uppity with one of those nuns. I had a plant superintendent one time. He went to Catholic school. He said, why, if you offended one of those nuns in the least, in the least way, she'd just slap you right across the face right there in class. Now, you put that kind of discipline, you put that kind of authority in the classroom, you don't need to stone anybody to death. You won't have any juvenile delinquency. You won't have any kids that get out of line. You got to have corporal punishment. Of course, you can't have that because the state owns the children. And the state's purpose is to disrupt the family, destroy the family unit, and to merge America into the New World Order. Now, the plan's working perfectly. Perfectly. I just wanted to point out to you that there was a time when we used to have ownership of our children. Today we don't have it. As a result of that loss of ownership, the people that own the child, that is the state, they've got probation officers and social ladies and psychiatrists and psychologists and paid professionals, people that have letters after their names that are smarter than you are, dum-dum, and smarter than God Almighty himself. Of course, they haven't got a clue as to what to do about juvenile delinquency and drive-by shootings, and they don't have a clue as to how to bring order to the public schools. Now that they have abolished parental control, now that they have abolished parental property rights, and now that they have introduced permissiveness into the public institutions, in Leviticus 19:3, it says, "You shall fear every man, his mother, and his father, and keep my Sabbaths. I'm the Eternal, your God." In Leviticus 20, verse 9, "For every one that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother, and his blood shall be upon him." Deuteronomy 5:16, "Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be prolonged and that it may go well with you in the land which the Eternal your God gives you." Now, here's what you do with children that are below the age of 18, actually below the age of 21. You see, this concept of adult, you know, a majority or a adulthood at 18, it doesn't come from the Bible, that comes from the state. In the Bible, you become an adult ready to emancipate when you turn 21. For 20 years, boys and girls, you're under the authority of mommy and daddy. And if you give mommy and daddy any guff, They have the absolute power of life or death over children. Oh no, it's too much power for mommies and daddies, and God screwed up when he delegated that kind of power to parents, but I'm just reporting that's the way it used to work. And when it worked that way, we didn't have juvenile delinquents. And we didn't have parental abuse. We didn't have children abusing their parents. In Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 through 21, it says, "If a man has a stubborn and a rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them," when mom and dad has whipped this little punk, and they still can't get him under control or keep him under control, "then shall his father and mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city," that's called the city council, "and unto the gate of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious, he will not obey our voice, he is a glutton, or he is a drunkard, and all of the men of his city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shall you put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear." I think that if you were to take a, 15, 16, 18-year-old kid out and stone him to death, I think that the rest of the children in the community would take a look at that. I think if children were informed that their parents owned them and that they had the power of life and death over them, I think that they would treat their parents a little better. I think. Now, my parents did not have the power of life and death over me when I was a child growing up, but I minded pretty well, and we still had corporal punishment. We still had discipline. We still had discipline and corporal punishment in the schools. There wasn't any messing around in the schools. Nobody talked back, to my knowledge. I never saw anybody talk back to Mrs. Wilds in the third grade. I mean, that old lady would have grabbed some little punk-ass kid in the third grade, shook him until his teeth rattled, slapped him up alongside the head, sent him down to the principal, who would have spanked him, sent him home with a note, which would have got him whipped within an inch of his life. I think that would have straightened him out. But, God has made a provision here. I mean, if you've got some kid over here that's knocking old ladies over the head and stealing their purses to buy drugs, and you can't get this punk out of, under control, there's a solution to that problem. Now, our Supreme Court of the United States here in the United States says, no, we're not going to do that. Here in the United States, our Supreme Court said, No, you can't stone a kid to death. You can't kill a child under the age of 18, even if he goes out and murders somebody. So you can see that our Supreme Court is at loggerheads, at opposite ends of the pole with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, they're in full harmony with Christianity and religion and Muslim philosophy and blah, 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 blah. I think the Muslims still practice that, at least to some degree. They come here to the United States and they want to practice this. There was a guy here in St. Louis, I believe it was, Muslim guy. And his daughter got uppity with him and wouldn't obey their parents, and so the father killed the daughter. And, of course, they caught him, and then, of course, they put him in prison and locked him up and so on. So I think the Muslims are still practicing this, or at least some of them do, to some degree. I don't think you got very much juvenile delinquency in Saudi Arabia or in Muslim countries, but then, that's another story for another day. And then in Deuteronomy 27:16, "Cursed be he that setteth light by his father or his mother, and all the people shall say amen." Cursed be any man that will not listen to or obey his father and his mother. Now, in Matthew 15:4, "For God commanded, saying, honor your father and mother, and he that curses father or mother, let him die the death." Do you know who said that? Hey, have you ever thought about that? Let me flip over here to Matthew 15, verse 4. Let me read that to you. You know about sweet Jesus? You ever heard about sweet Jesus? Oh, tell people, you know, that sweet Jesus you're talking about is meaner than a junkyard dog, you know. Matthew 15, verse 4. Then, in verse 1, he starts off, then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread. And Jesus answered and said unto them, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor your father and mother, and he that curses father or mother, let him die the death. But you say, now here's the scribes and Pharisees. See, they had watered down this law, honor your father and mother themselves, just like our Supreme Court, just like our society, just like our schools do today. And they came to Jesus and they said, hey, how come your disciples don't wash their hands and go through all these rituals that we go through here in the Catholic Church or here in the local Baptist or Protestant church? You know, we sing three songs before the sermon. How come your disciples don't do that? And he says, hey, sucker, how come you guys don't obey the fifth commandment? And notice that he cited that he dies the death. You know, this same Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God does man live. And the only law that was in writing at that moment in time when Jesus uttered those words were the Old Testament laws, the Old Testament itself, 39 books. Not one word of the New Testament had been written yet, boys and girls. Now people, you know, they call here and they say, oh my God, social lady came out and took our children. Yeah, but you don't want to practice the Mosaic law. You want to practice the law of your state. I say it's about time that you woke up to reality over here. You know, there's choices to be made. You want to practice the law of Connecticut? Well, okay, well then obey the law of your God, Connecticut. You want to obey the law of your God, California, and practice the laws of California? Get after it. Don't let me get in your way. You want to obey the law of Moses? You want to obey the law of God? Well, that's another story. And we're getting after it. So in Matthew 19:19, honor your father and mother. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Luke 18:20, you know the commandments. Don't commit adultery, don't kill, don't steal, don't bear false witness, and honor your father and mother. And in Ephesians 6, verse 2, the Apostle Paul said, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. So the place to start, if you want to get control of your family and get control of your children, is to get control of the Ten Commandments first. And commandment number 5 is the one that deals with children. We'll talk more about that as we progress along here, boys and girls. But for right now, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. We'll be back next time talking about parents and child, the doctrine of parens patriae, from the secular as well as the scriptural sources of law when we come back next time. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week, both here in the United States and around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.